Hello. So
Hello.
we're both in libraries today.
We are. I love what are you have like travel books behind you.
It's like there's a whole situation with Life magazines from over the years
Oh,
and travel
okay.
books. There's a Life magazine from 1965.
Wait, does that say RFK on it? That
Yeah,
Life
that one.
magazine?
That one, yeah.
Whoa.
Is June 1988,
Huh.
actually. The family remembers RFK, his legacy, public and private. Sometimes when you go through your belongings, you decide to get rid of a lot of stuff. And then it's actually very interesting to then go back later on to see what you kept. In
No,
the purge, right? In the purge, like what actually did you feel like at that time was worth keeping until the next purge? This magazine to me does not feel like something that needs to be kept longer, but
it's
it's not me.
probably worth something though. I mean, I think of Life magazine and I feel like Life magazine only on the cover has ever had like Kennedys and Beatles. Like those are the two that when I think of Life magazine, I think of like those two on there.
There are three Life magazines in this collection with the Kennedys on the cover. So yes, I can attest to that.
I used to and I say used to in that I think I stopped the last couple of years, like in the last couple of years, but I used to collect the Vanity Fair Hollywood issue. And I think I started in like 1997 or 1998. And it was such this thing for me when I was living in Hollywood and had my big dreams. And, it would be, I think it was always around February that that issue would come out. And then like, as I started to stray away from the entertainment industry and, things change. Like you're, I don't know. I wouldn't see Vanity Fair and news. I don't know. I wasn't near newsstands or whatever, but I would think to myself, oh shit, I forgot to get the copy this year. And like, I think I even ordered one on eBay. And then it was a couple years later that I was like, why do I want to keep doing this? Like, again, I mean, breaking old beliefs and traditions and patterns. Like, okay, I used to collect these and I've forgotten why I've collected them. And I think I can stop collecting them now, maybe.
Yeah. This is actually a perfect segue into what we wanted to talk about, which is the cycles of nature and the cycles of our life and how we move through time and space. But I think this is very relevant and everyone can relate to it because it's true that there are certain things, at times in our lives where we're attached to ideas or concepts, or it might be a thing like, collecting magazines because the magazine reminds you of this moment, or there's some article that you really want to read in there, or, a column or whatever that might be. And we hold on to them and sometimes pass their expiration date when it no longer serves. And then you go through the moment where it's like, okay, we're going to do a spring clean or we're going to do something else. And I wanted to say, because this is also very relevant, a friend of mine, Victoria Cray, who is a wonderful astrologer, Victory Astrology, shout out, is doing sort of a 30-day, I don't want to call it a challenge. It's sort of an exploration of Jupiter and Uranus because there's this, astrological conjunction of these two planets that are lining up in the sky on April 20th, 2024. And it only happens every 13 years. And as part of the assignments or the ideas coming in was let's do a little bit of a purge because Jupiter is about excess and accumulation and growth and expansion. So again, do you have a pile of magazines sitting somewhere that you acquired over a period of time that are just sitting there and not offering anything else in this moment? And is it time to sort of get rid of it? It could be that, it could be any, whatever, anything you're collecting in the kitchen, in the closet, and the clothes. I've gotten rid also a lot lately of I found a stack in this purge specifically, I found a stack of birthday cards. And it's sort of, what are we holding on to those for? Because a lot of them just would say like, love Andrea. Though, no, you gave, you always wrote something beautiful. But I also, cleaned up, like, I always put a bunch of stuff on my refrigerator, and I thought, what's on this refrigerator? Mm-hmm. What's here that I can let go of now that I've been staring at for years and are just like old things and ticket stubs, et cetera, that aren't necessary.
Yeah. Same thing with subscriptions. I went through our subscriptions and both Ian and I were subscribing to Stars, it seemed. And I'm like, okay, well, that feels indulgent. I don't know. But like, I always think of this acting class I was in, like, you know, you get into these routines, you get into these patterns, you get into these systems. And I was about 2 or 3 years into working in this studio, and it was next to this place called Doughboys on 3rd Street. I don't know if you ever went to Doughboys.
It's the
best soup. Oh my God.
Major brunch spot. It's
right?
Very clean.
So,
yeah.
So it was always like, I would find myself towards the end of my tenure in the studio where I get like halfway through, like, I don't know. I'd sit in the class and I was just bored. I'll be very frank. I was just bored. And, I would think to myself, okay, after this person goes up, I'll go next door to Doughboys and get the brownie. Like, I made it all about the brownie. And I would go and get the brownie, take a break, you know, whatever. One day I was standing out there and I'm like, if I'm just coming here for the brownie, it's a really expensive brownie and it takes up my whole Tuesday night. So maybe it's time that I stop coming to the acting class because... But I often find that too. Sometimes I just overstay in things because mm-hmm. it's hard to break away. And, you know, I've had people, I used to have a Patreon. I guess I still kind of do. But like, I told people, I was like, guys, I'm not good at this format actually. So I'm not going to post anymore. If you want to keep subscribing just because you like me. And I'm actually very open to that. If people just like with you and me, even if like, hey, if you guys want to support us, like shoot us a Venmo. I'm not proud, but I think it's nice to have an exchange of value. I think it's a great energy for people. Like send a card and then throw it out. But you know, where was I going with that? Yeah. So I would feel loyal. I would feel like I was, you know, breaking a loyalty by ending the subscription to this acting class. And I had people that were like, hey, so I'm going to like leave your Patreon. I really like what you're doing, but I want to just, you know, direct my money elsewhere and maybe I'll buy a crystal from. I'm like, that's totally cool. Like nothing personal. But yeah, I think I think that's a big thing too with us for that are kind of some people that might consider themselves traditionalists or conservative, or, you know, it's this loyalty, like the person passed away. So how long do I hold on to the item that they left me? It kind of weighs me down now. I'd rather remember them some other way. And it's, you know, it's very Marie Kondo. Does this bring me joy? And you really do have to remove all the attachments you have to something. Either you like it or you don't. Either it makes you feel good and reminds you of good times, or it doesn't.
I love that. And sometimes it does occur where you get rid of the thing, whatever it is, and later on there might be a tinge of regret. I wish I had, it would be nice to look at that book one more time, or, you know, oh, I wish I had that Vanity Fair Hollywood issue from, you know, 2001 or whatever the thing was, but life moves on. And generally that, in my experience, that the energy or the emotion around it doesn't last very long, because again, we want to move the thing forward. And I think that's part of that's living, right? To be fully present. And every time we hold on one more burden or one more, you know, the weight of that past experience or past energy around it. Because even in that scenario, it's like, I'm holding on to these magazines for a life that I thought I wanted and a life that I in some ways was living, right? And I wanted to go even deeper into it. But now my life is completely shifted. My focus is different. My interests are different. I still, you know, will pick up whatever, you know, like I'd love to look at that magazine on the newsstand if it ever is printed in paper anymore. I don't even know. But the energy around it has changed so much. And so, you know, What is the benefit of looking back?
I mean, look, I think actually there are seasons too, though. Like, there's a season for nostalgia, maybe, or there's a period in your life when, like, you go up into grandmother's attic and go try on the old clothes. I mean, I think that's nice. I think it's nice to hold on to some things. I mean, I have sterilites of like all these teen novels that I read as a kid, but I've weeded through them. And every year I'll kind of go through and I'll do another pass, you know, but there's something sort of sweet about remembering that time and the book itself. And, you know, when I was, gosh, a few years ago, this was funny. So my first Christmas not drinking, I was like, I need a project. So I was at my parents' house. So I was up in the attic and I went like nuclear on that play. It was a lot. Like, I just pulled shit down and, oh my God. I mean, Little House on the Prairie color forums, you guys. So I just took pictures of everything and it was fun. And it was like, you know, eventually you have to be a little ruthless. And I mean, also growing up in the 80s, which was just like maximum materialism. I mean, the stuff that we played with was awesome. But at the same time, it's like, okay, this had its moment in the spotlight for me, and I'm good. And it kind of, I can put it up in the cloud of memory of just things that were fun, and it's fine. It's fine that they've moved on. And there are people that are collectors. My uncle was one. There's, you know, people are, I'm not like that. And if you are like that and you love it and it gives you joy to have, you know, artifacts and crystals all around you, then that's the beauty of your life and your story. That's the setting. It's interesting. It's so interesting for us to be able to like look in on people's lives and be like, oh, that's how you live. Oh, cool. Wow. You know, and not have judgment, not be like, wow, that's weird. I mean, maybe a little bit, but, you know, it's, yeah, man, do what makes you happy.
Yeah. 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 So this conjunction that's coming up in April 20th, Jupiter and Uranus. As I mentioned, Jupiter, you know, Jupiter's our good luck planet, the planet of wisdom, our belief systems, in some cases might be limiting beliefs, which is obviously important. But, you know, generally it's a benefic, positive prosperity, and this expansiveness and knowledge, like deepening in our wisdom body. And Uranus is the planet of surprises and rebellion and change. And so these moments of impact, right, or energetic impact is, you know, hitting the collective. Often with Uranus transits, we see things like earthquakes and hurricanes and, you know, bridge collapses and you know, unexpected events that might show up in different ways and around the world, really. And the last time that this happened, they meet, Jupiter and Uranus are meeting in Taurus, in the sign of Taurus. So if you know your astrological chart, look for that house, because that's might be where a, you know, something is going to happen. And if you have any planets around 20, 21, 22 degrees, that's also where the specifically the energy is going to sort of assert itself. And the last time that it had this conjunction was in 2010, 2011, and it was at 0 degrees Aries and also 28, 29 Pisces. So there was like three passes at different degree points. And when I look at that, that was the total shift in my personal life. And I have planets directly opposite those degree points. So my, you know, late degree Virgo, early Libra was also very involved in that transit. You know, if you had anything that went on in that time, it's very interesting to go back. And again, it's not like, okay, let me go out and like, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe you want to look at your calendar from that period. Like, did you travel? It was sort of everything that Jupiter and Uranus could offer was affected me. It very much was a time also that really launched my spiritual practice and my spiritual exploration. It wasn't like, oh, on this day the thing happened, but in the course of events during that period, it opened up a lot of doors to really me kind of figure out who I was and what I wanted a greater experience of in regards to my soul and where I was heading and what was, you know, sort of a bigger frame of experience. And Jupiter offers that in terms of like spirituality, religion, belief systems. Also teachers show up with Jupiter and guides, gurus, things like that. So I don't know. Do you remember what you were up to in 2010, 2011?
Yeah, I got married. Very cool. It's actually funny because you're talking about the travel. I got married. You know, Ian and I tied the knot in June of 2010. On our honeymoon, we were in Turks and Caicos, and I got a call to audition for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. For some reason, I always got called in for David Fincher films. It was really like, it was lovely. But I was like, I'm auditioning and like Robin Wright Penn gets the part. I'm like, yeah, that's reasonable. I mean, of course she gets the part. Like, and then also though, but my acting, I did very well in 2011, and that was actually kind of the peak of my success was 2011 and 2012. And then I had shot an episode of that show Hung, and yeah, and like the next day I went to St. Thomas. I don't know what's up with me and like, you know, the Caribbean, but I was going to St. Thomas to visit some friends. And it sounds very bougie for me to say that. It was not bougie. The second I landed, I got a call that they wanted me to come back and do more. And I physically could have made it back to set because of a long trip to get to St. Thomas. They also wanted me to do nudity. And I was like, no. And that was a choice that I made at the time. Because the best part of it was, oh, they really liked me. They thought I was funny. They wanted to bring me back. Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of left it at. And it didn't really work out. But yeah, I mean, the other funny thing was, it was the peak of my success where I booked a lot of work in that time. And it was booking that work that actually revealed to me that I didn't want to do it anymore.
Wow.
Which is really weird, right? But I mean, I booked a lot and then I didn't book. I went dry for like several months. And I looked back on it, on the success part of it, and I was like, you know what? It's just not good enough. That's even if I had months and months and months like that, the effort that I'm putting in, the sacrifices that I've been making all this time, I just don't think I want it enough anymore. And I learned a lot. I actually had an audition for like some series regular, and I sat across from this acting coach, and she was like, I see no reason why you shouldn't be a series regular. And I wanted to cry because no one had ever said that to me. And this, it was so funny too, because at the same time, her saying that, I was like, oh, that's all I need to know then. Yeah. I don't need to go prove this. I can stop. It was so crazy. Should have just paid someone to say that to me and be like, oh, good, I'm good. Let's go. I'm done.
No, but you have to go through the experience of it. It's such a great example of really pretty much everything that we've been talking about, even, you know, with all of these eclipses as well. It's sometimes the most obvious thing is right in front of you, but we have to get there. We have to recognize it, and we have to give ourselves credit to see the thing from an outside perspective in order to let it go, whatever that story looks like.
And, you know, we talk about manifesting, and we all want more. There's all something that we're all wanting to create. And one of the best lessons I've learned about myself is if I'm not really going for it, I actually probably don't want it that much. I think I do. It's a belief. People have told me I should want it. Like I would get an audition for some like one-line co-star on, you know, Scandal. And my manager was like, people would kill for this. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's, I guess so, but I'm not like that. And, you know, it's a crazy industry, as we know. And like, you're made to feel wrong a lot, and your opinion doesn't count for anything. So, you know, when I realized that about myself, it really actually helped me heal and release from a lot of expectations and a lot of things I thought I wanted or thought I was supposed to want. Mm-hmm. And when I kind of examined everything I've done in my life that I just really wanted, that happened, and things that didn't happen, I was like, I don't think I wanted it that much though. I mean, it's not rocket science to throw yourself and pursue something. You know, you just keep going, and you just keep going. And the curiosity and the inspiration and the motivation is the fire. It's like that keeps you going too. And eventually I think you do achieve things. But when it's a sort of shell of an idea, you know, I think we get lost in these bumper stickers, and I think we get lost in these memes that come across sometimes, or just these affirmations that other people are saying and writing, and we're trying to convince ourselves that this is the intention I should have. I think that in and of itself creates a lot of the separation from you actually listening to yourself and being like, well, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. What does that feel like? If I get past the words, if I get past the intonation, if I get past that and it actually feel it in my body, like, well, what does that even feel like? Is this something I am actually interested in? Or is it something I'm just being told?
And also, too, as we were talking about, sort of like holding on to the old stuff, the old stories, the old ideas. Mm-hmm. Is that feeling in this moment now, or is it a holdover from a previous feeling or idea or expectation that has like maybe run its course, but to again, stay in the now and stay in the present moment is incredibly important. But as you were talking, I kept thinking like, you know, if it, you know, that phrase, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. Mm. And I have a lot of Libra in my chart. I go back and forth a lot. And I know that some people think like, oh, this is such a negative Libra stereotype. It's not accurate. Mm-hmm. And that's correct. Like, it depends on what planets and what all of that and like the makeup of the whole thing. So again, all of this energy is going to manifest differently for different people. But I also was thinking too, is that because we're sacral manifesting, or I'm a sacral manifesting generator. It's coming from my gut. You're emotional.
Yeah.
So it's coming from a different place. So for you, that feeling body is incredibly important. For me, it's more of like the gut instinct in the now. So I think, you know, I do like to bring up the human design every now and again, because it gives us information on how these moments show up, and to, again, pay attention to what that expression is.
Yeah. And like, it's funny, there's this Arcade Fire song, and like one of the lyrics is all the bad advice. And I think about when I got to Hollywood and all the bad advice and all the things I let myself believe. And I really do wish I'd had more I just wish I'd had more awareness around all of this back in the day, but it wasn't quite running around. It wasn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't quite in the zeitgeist yet. But yeah, I mean, even like, and I'm even careful about the hell yes. You know, I think Elizabeth Gilbert says this. She's like, you know, everyone's like, what's my passion? Like, you're supposed to have a passion. And it's like, we are so fucked up in so many ways and dealing with so many, like, we're just sort of dealing with unwinding so many patterns. We're all doing so much work that I feel like, too, if someone, I feel like you can get worried that you don't have passion about something. And it's like, it's okay that you don't. You know, she says, follow your curiosity. And that's definitely more my jam, which is like, well, let's just see. Let's just see where this takes us. Let's just see where this goes. Oh, this is kind of neat. This is interesting. And sometimes I have just a hell no. Like, I think that's more for me also just stating my boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's funny. Someone reached out to me about maybe doing a meditation together on a Zoom. And my immediate thought was, no, this is something I like to do by myself, you know? And I felt bad. You know what I mean? I didn't want her to take it personally, but then I was like, it's okay. I mean, I'm entitled to like have a, you know, I'm entitled to handle my practice the way I want to.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, there's so much I wanted to say that ties into what we've been talking about. But I think I'm going to start with something I don't think I've run by you yet, which is something I came across in this this Gene Keys. I think it was a podcast with Richard Rudd. And he was talking about how he thinks that we are all moving into more of a collective experience of being polymaths and not masters. And a polymath is someone who knows a little bit about a lot of things. And, you know, there's definitely a negative connotation, jack of all trades, master mm-hmm. of none, which is really funny because in that meeting I got to have with Taisitu Rinpoche, he said he was joking about something and he said, I am jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. And he said, never, ever call yourself an expert. Or he said, never, ever call yourself a master. You will immediately be exposed. And I loved that because the term master, the term expert, it has like a finality to it. Like it actually feels very limiting and confining to me. Because, and that might just be something too to evolve, which is like you can be a master and constantly be learning. You can be a master or an expert and you have to leave a window open. I really, you know, we're talking about letting go of old beliefs and patterns. And it's like, we all have to do that in order to, you know, I guess maybe it's better to say like, We're in a process of mastery, like constant, but mastery is constant. It's constantly growing. It's like I can be an expert VCR repairman, and that is no longer needed. Right. So better to, you know, or a doctor. I want a doctor to be constantly challenging his beliefs or her beliefs and constantly looking at the next thing and what is this innovation and letting go of an old method. I remember when Ian had his hernia surgery, he did a lot of research and there was getting a mesh, it was like a mesh surgery they do and a non-mesh. And he wanted the non-mesh and there were many doctors that wouldn't do it. And it was really interesting, you know, where you're just sort of like, wow, I mean, and of course we've seen it. Like, I mean, facts, science, it's all, we don't know what we don't know. It's still growing. Everything is still opening and innovating. And it's so necessary. And I sort of corrected Whitney Aronoff. I was on her podcast last week and she was very sweet at the end. She's like, you know, Andrew's a crystal expert. And I'm like, whoa, no. Don't do that. Yeah. Because I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly pondering and thinking and questioning. And, you know, one thing that was proven as fact before might be disproven now based on technology that we have.
Yeah. I need to say this because it's important. Generally, women fall along these lines where we don't give ourselves enough credit, and maybe expert's not the word because it's triggering, and it is particularly, I think, to women. I do think that we know a lot more than we give ourselves credit for, and in all of the things that you just said, like moving into mastery, it's a process, right? So it's like, as women, we're interested in that process. We're not necessarily interested in the final stage because we know there is no final stage. It's just, it's continuing to grow and evolve. And one of the issues in our culture, and particularly in sort of the expert culture that we see now, is that men walk in and they're like, I'm the expert. I'm going to talk about this thing. And there are men that are going on podcasts and going in interviews and doing a lot of media that are like, I'm having in, you know, I'm the doctor with X years of experience. Like, I'm the expert on menopause. And this is like, I've just been watching this. It's just like, oh my God. And all, there are a lot of women doctors, and they are just calling bullshit right and left. And there are a lot of women authors and experts, right, in their field that are trying and wanting to get more public and more publicity and more presence to be seen. And it's interesting because the doors aren't always open. And I just think this is part of this overall cultural conversation that is being had and needs to continue to be had. That said, I do believe and agree with you, where we're all going is like beyond this expert thing into this exploration phase. And this is part of the age of Aquarius and the age of the individual and all of us sort of stepping up into our own self-mastery so that we're doing it and we don't have anything to prove. Mm-hmm. And really stepping in. And I think particularly for women to really enhance that and embody that is very important. And also for the men to step off the pedestal to learn that, you know, it's not a one and done. It's not of like once you hit like master, you know, it whatever the field is that you're in, like master lawyer, master this, master that. You know, it doesn't end there. And there's room for others at the top.
Yeah, there, no one has the final word here.
Yeah.
Like, but I think too, even in our, and in the, you have a lot of nines in your chart, don't you? Do you have a lot of nines?
No, I have tens. My gift is nine, subtle body, but I have three tens in my chart.
Because that's mastery. That's one of the descriptions of the nine. That's my, whatever all the numbers added up. Is that the path or the destiny?
That's the path, the life path.
Well, that's neat. Your gift is my path.
Yeah.
Can I bring up the natural law that we were talking about?
Yes, okay. This is important.
So I had this download the other day. And what – so my one of my many wisdom paths that I've taken myself on was I did this priestess training many years ago. And one of the things that we spent a lot of time on was meditating and contemplating on principles of consciousness and principles, meaning a word like freedom. Freedom is a frequency. It just is. Mm. There's no, it's sort of these, I guess you could call them these cities, but there's no like a little bit or not a little bit. Freedom is. Now there are experiences and phenomena here in the 3D that can limit freedom. It can, you know, our 3D paradigm is that it's three dimensional. It's nature. It's being in a physical body. These principles exist no matter what. They transcend the human earthly experience. So abundance, peace, serenity, love, power. These are all, they just are. There's no, like, you could say that there's an opposite that exists with it, but that does not undermine or demean love itself. Like, love just is on its own. And so when these principles express and play out in our human existence, it's like, I just think of it as like kind of going through a funnel. They're going through these pipes. It's going through these physical cables. You know what I mean? Like it weaves itself through this matrix. So conditions in life can appear to block this principle, but they're not really. The principle still is. Mm-hmm. You can have abundance is always available. Health is always available. There are physical 3D experiences that appear, I will say appear, to either limit or expand them. And part of that game, I think, is observing natural law. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started riffing on it because I went and bought the I Ching because I'm like, all right, well, it's the next logical step. Follow the curiosity, right? So I pull out the I Ching. Well, and the number 55 gene key is a major collective gene key that everyone is going through. And it's the victim versus freedom. So victim is the shadow. Freedom is the gift and the city. So it's like freedom, freedom, right? George Michael. Sure. But I looked up, I was curious what the I Ching says about the number 55, because the gene keys are an evolution and a synarchy, we'll say, of the I Ching. And so I look up the 55 and it's abundance. And I'm like, oh, fun. Yay. That's good. Abundance is great. I love abundance. It's a very interesting write-up that it has about abundance, because it's actually less about abundance and more about the decline of abundance once it peaks. So I'm like, oh, this is an earthly description then. And it's just describing natural law. You have an incredible harvest, abundance. Everyone eats. It's mm-hmm. delicious, wonderful. It's not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is not attaching to this expression or form of abundance as an earthly material thing, because that is now inserted itself into natural law. Everything that is born has to die. Everything has a cycle. Mm-hmm. It's like I was complaining about there being wave patterns. And it's like, actually, there has to be a wave pattern. I mean, I was joking with some women at yoga the other day, and we're saying how in this eclipse season, like, I have a day where I'm like, oh my God, go get it. And the next day it's like, and no, it's like every other day. It's like, and scene. So it was interesting reading the I Ching, because it was a little kind of somber. It was like, and it was, but they were, what they were saying was people, I think what they were saying was people get so attached to this moment of abundance that it creates a suffering, because the abundance will not last.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is to maintain the sense of abundance, even as something is playing out its natural law, its natural decline. And they talk about how you can actually mindfully maintain abundance. So it's like, it's one thing to have the big harvest and everyone eats, and then you're like, woo, that was awesome. And like looking for more harvest from that harvest, or you can take the leftovers and can them. You can continue to perpetuate a sense of abundance that's like a different picture than it was. And like what we were talking about, I don't know if we were talking about it here, but like, and then you follow the energy. It's like, okay, well, that crop is done. And it's going through its natural decay, and we're going to compost. Oh, but look, potatoes are in season. Oh, look, poinsettias no, really. It's like, and I think that's where a lot of us can relax, because I think the phenomena of the decay and decline takes over, and we get overly attached to that, and we forget that there is abundance all around, everywhere. It's the, you know, relax, pause, meditate. Where's the energy today? Oh, today it's actually doing this thing, which is not obviously part of that big harvest buffet. You know, today's cleanup. Today is putting away the leftovers. Today, like letting things play out in their natural cycle and trusting that the cycle will be reborn again. It may be reborn in a different picture right behind you.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that, you know, it is interesting that these energies, these frequencies, as you call them, principles, right? They exist all the time, and they're mm-hmm. on their own frequency pattern, right? With dips and ebbs and probably not spikes. Like, to me, it's constantly moving in mm-hmm. these vibratory patterns. But it is the 3D that's spiking. Like, we've had these solar flares, and then the comet's mm-hmm. coming through, and then this is happening and that's happening. And the question is like, is this the thing that's going to throw you off, right? Or do you maintain an energetic resonance with the idea of abundance through its ebbs and flows? And as you said, you came to me with something which was like, everything I do makes me money, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that honestly too is like cleaning the closet, doing the accounting. It is getting on a sales call. It is, you know, looking at your bank balance. All of those things contribute to an abundance mindset because you're walking in that energy field and it's just moving. It's cycling through without pressure or doing of it. And it's interesting. I was thinking too, as you kind of brought up the numerology of the nine, but also I'm thinking of the numerology of the three, the positive mind. I have this thing where it's like, I have an issue with happy people. less now as I've gotten older. But when I was younger, happy people really drove me nuts. Like, it was very hard for me to engage with happy people because I thought, what don't they know? Like, how can they maintain this sort of facade of happiness? Like, it just seemed fake. It seemed false. I literally could not do it at all. But as I got older, I started to think maybe there's something here that they can teach me.
Okay, and wait. Can I ask though, did you go through a goth period?
No.
Oh, you're like a sniper goth. Like, you're like a goth in preppy's clothing.
Huh. I'm just very cynical. There was a lot of cynicism and there was a lot of like, I don't even want to say it was like mistrust. It was sort of confusion. Just how do people behave that way? Like, what is it like going through life with a positive outlook and just having a smile for everyone you meet? And I just thought, this is really strange. So it's taken a lot of years to work through this. That said, I did realize that there was something there. There was something available on that frequency that was attainable for me, even in my sort of like dubious outlook. And I think that I would offer to those people that are on the like happy frequency, like everything's happy all the time and isn't life grand, you know, there's actually something available to them on the other frequency where there's, you know, to learn how to slow down, to learn how to, you know, be discerning and to not take everything in that sort of sunny outlook, because, you know, life brings us all kinds of experiences. And sometimes we go through grief and sometimes we go through anger and sometimes we go through a fallow period in that whatever, like just using the sort of abundance, you know, example. And so all of it, it's like they're all chords of this, mm-hmm. of this cosmic field that we get to sort of move through and hop back and forth on and use. And I think the understanding that we can relax or hop, go back and forth gives us, you know, there's a lot of energy there. And I think for us to really understand that, like, we're the ones in charge of this experience and our thoughts and our feelings can move us towards and through and around and up and down, and no one else is doing it for us.
Yeah, I say this often, like, no one's coming to save us, guys. Like, we probably sent ourselves from, I mean, this is where it gets wacky quantum, but sometimes I think to myself, like, oh, I sent myself. Oh, shit. Oh, it's like you look around, you're like, oh, I'm the president. Oh, okay. But like, you know, just back to the whole every move I make makes me money. I got that from Amanda Francis she's the money queen, and I like her. You know, I encourage people to look her up, have a listen, because she's very much about teaching about principle. Like, her mm-hmm. thing is money, and you can apply that to any principle. And I feel like many of us are attached to our wounds and our lack of whatever's not here. And some, for some people, it's a relationship. For some people, it's something material. Some, for some people, it's health. Like, we're all looking for love, right? And I mean, you, for me, I can say that, you know, every move I make makes me money. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur and a business owner. And so, like, it's really constantly on my mind. I'm also a manifesting generator. So I have 1,000 things in my head of things that I could do, should do, want to do, maybe I do. And I'm one person. So when I even take one of those things to do, I am judging and questioning and doubting that it's the right thing to do, and feeling bad about the 999 things I'm not doing. So it's fun here, right? And, you know, my one superpower that we all share, our one superpower, is free will. You choose your thoughts, you choose your actions, you choose. And consequences come from your choices, blah, blah, blah. So for me, whenever I'm doing something with the business, or my day for that matter, I put myself through it where it's like, okay, so, you know, should I do this? And it's like, if I can just remove the trying to get it right and be like, doesn't matter. Every move I make makes me money. So getting on this podcast with you, it's going to make me money, whatever. But what it's doing is it's giving me energy. Mm-hmm. So what's going to give me energy? What's going to, you know, it's, we can say money, we can say prana, we can say vitality, we can say fulfillment, we can say joy, whatever principle you want to have a bigger experience of, you want to carry through into your daily life. You want to funnel through those cords, that grid. All right. Well, every move I make makes me freedom. So mm-hmm. like, every, you know, oh, I'm just folding laundry, listening to a podcast. Well, somehow that increases my freedom. That makes more freedom for me. And I just find it to be really empowering and really just such a relief. It's like, stop worrying about getting it right. Mm. There's a million things to do. You're one person. No one expects you to do the 1,000 things in a day. You might expect it, but that's your problem, you know? So yeah, I encourage people to, you know, whatever it is, whatever is kind of gnawing at you, we're holistic people. It's back to that polymath. It's like, I'm not here to do one thing. I'm here to do many, many things. And we all are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this is a very important conversation, and you know that we have in many different guises, in many different ways, because we're retraining, right? We're letting go of the duality of the conditioning that we've been imprinted. And I don't use, you know, I'm not personally into like conspiracy stuff and all about the deep state and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and this, you know, that we've been brainwashed. And, you know, I mean, I've heard people say that like we're completely brainwashed. And when we go out into the world, it's just, you know, there's this whole thing that we're, you know, running through this sort of maze of the 3D that's been created. And in some ways, I do agree that, and I think our, you know, we like both like Jessa Reed, and she talks about like literally we're living inside of a matrix, and to understand that you're in the matrix basically is the thing that's going to get you out of the matrix. But, and two, to understand that all of these principles of the natural world, of the cosmic field, are available, and that we're actually just to tune back into them and be in the moment. And how do we do that? Right. So one way we talked about is breath. Right. Mm-hmm. And to really tune into your physical body, the somatic experience of you, and to move that frequency of prana, which is life force, through your physical system to bring you back into the moment to make your next best decision. Right. So as you said, it's like you have 1,000 things that you could be doing, but you're just going to pick one and be present in that one. And that's fine because you can make a new decision next. So prana certainly is one. We also use mantra to activate what, you know, a higher frequency thought form. And the mantra is going to put us on a higher energetic current that's going to lift us out of whatever it could be. Very negative, mildly negative, mid-level negative, or, you know, even mildly positive, but it's going to move you up, right? It's going
it to doesn't, see. Didn't, I don't know. I feel like Guru Jagat taught this, but like mantra doesn't have a polarity to it, right? Like mantra also is a constant frequency. And now this is something else too, that comes up a lot, which is when you state an intention, when you state a, I'm going to do things this way now, you know, reality transurfing is another, it's another book you guys can get. you know, they talk a lot about what they call pendulums, where it's like everything has a negative and a positive, and the pendulum swing. And when a pendulum swings one way, it can swing another way. And oftentimes, and Jessa talks about this too, it's like, have we talked about this here? I can't remember.
Yeah. I can't remember where.
Well, the thing is, when you make a statement like that, I think we were talking on the phone actually. So hi everyone. This is our phone call the other night. but when you claim an intention, you're also activating the polarity, the polarity. I don't want to call it positive or negative. And I feel like Guru Jagat taught that too, because and Jessa says this, like the second you're like, okay, I'm going to apply for 10 jobs or whatever. And then like the next day you get this parking ticket. You're like, what the fuck? I said I was going to be like, I thought I was going in the prosperous way. But that's the other part too of like, when we funnel these things into natural law, like things have a polarity, there's consequence. And, you know, you're going to build a big house. I mean, oftentimes, and I tell myself this, I do like a timeline hop or whatever, or meditation. And I'm like, this is who I'm going to be. I could be also activating the polarity. So the first things that show up might not look positive and like they're going in the direction I want them to go to. It's like you find yourself somewhere and you're going to drive, you want to drive to the better place. Maybe you have to drive through a bad neighborhood. And the important thing is to remember this is all the journey, and don't, you know, yes, some things are going to kick up, because I think that's the other thing too. And when people start doing Kundalini yoga, like I'll hear people say to me like, oh, I heard it's dangerous. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. I mean, I think that anytime you make a new commitment or you start something or you decide that you want to live in a different way, there's stuff gets kicked up.
Yeah.
And it's either you're releasing it or you have to kind of look down some shadow shit that's holding you back from going forward in this way, whether you like it or not. It happens. Everyone's experience is different. But I think of it as like building a house. Like, you've got to dig into the foundation if you want a strong foundation for this glorious house that you're building. Like you're going to dig up some skeletons back to Poltergeist. Right? So don't worry about it. I mean, that's something I have some pretty bold visions of things that I want to create this year. And if I look around at my current situation, I could get really like, well, shit, it's not working. And it's like, fuck, bullshit, it's not working. I don't know how it works. It's like anytime I go into, like Ian and I are repairing these amethysts for a client, and it's like the deeper we go, the more problems we're finding. We're like, oh, wow, this too. It doesn't mean we're not going to repair them and they're not going to look amazing, but sometimes you have to dig a little bit and deal with some bullshit. And then I think it's also important to look and see where there is progress and and these are these moments of gratitude and these moments of, oh, wow, the electric bill is only $300 this month. Oh, wow, actually, that's a win.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right to sort of tune into the experience of it, because all of these experiences build upon each other, and that's how we grow, right? To go through the thing. And this is one of these natural law principles, right? The only way out is through. And to have these experiences, then the next time that you're confronted with something, you have something to build from. And it goes also towards this idea around mastery and understanding, like every little bit of data, every feeling experience or actual like reality experience of like, well, I measured this window and, you know, this type of glass is going to work and this type of glass isn't going to work. And sometimes there's hail and, you know, and all of a sudden a tornado came through or whatever the thing is, right? We have more knowledge and more like hopefully integrated experience to move through to the next level. And so even more reason to sort of ride out the frequency of whatever it is to go up, right? To keep moving up.
I just wanted to finish though for your, because you were talking about mantra originally. And so then I just want to like invite people to, like, if mantra is part of your practice, like trusting that, you know, in that moment when maybe the phenomena is overwhelming, for good or bad, I mean, really good things could be coming in and you might freak out because, you know, you still have beliefs that maybe you don't deserve it or it's too good to be true or the other shoe's going to drop or whatever else has been programmed. That's why mantra is such a great, it's such a great chew toy for the mind to safely practice the principle, safely, like just take solace in it, that it's like, I can just sit here with this, you know, these words, this language, and I'm just going to let the energy live in this for a moment. It's why I love crystals. Crystals are a pattern. They are a continued frequency. They, down to the atomic structure of the lattice of a crystal, it's a repeated pattern. And a crystal, I tell this to people, like, yes, you can cleanse it. Yes, you can do whatever you want that's going to give you a sense of ritual and connection. And no, this crystal is always going to have this frequency of dot, dot, dot. This clear quartz crystal is always going to stay constant, much like mantra. So if you put a mantra box next to a crystal, I mean, look out, right? Take it away, Joanna.
The patterns, we have to experience the patterns. Mm-hmm. And that's part of this life, right? Is to understand that they're there. They have energy. They have distinct energy. They're all available, all of them, all of the time. And how do we align with them? What patterns are we aligning with? We get that choice, right? It's like the happy person is aligning with that happy thing and the negative person is aligning with the negative thing. And understand too that, again, as I found over a period of time, is there's something there for me also. It's not exclusive to somebody else. So
listen, I mean, you don't want a boring movie. Like if you just, it's like we like a little suspense, you know, like last eclipse season when I was going through some stuff and I set some intentions and it didn't look like they were, you know, none of them were showing up in the way I wanted them to. And then like the final like capper was my tax person telling me what I owed. And I was like, but honestly, I laughed because I was like, oh, this old chestnut. Oh, this, but you know what? This is part of the pattern. Yeah. This is how I know I'm close. This is that darkest before the dawn and trusting that. I mean, here's the thing too. Eventually we're going to leave behind everything we have described about natural law and the 3D and material and these bodies. And we are going to take with us the subtle body that has stored in us our experience on Earth of these principles that transcend dimension. And so the more we can remember the principles, they are kind of mutually exclusive, you know? It's like C.S. Lewis has this great quote, aim at heaven and you get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you get nothing. So But that's what we are. That's what we are as humans. We are the crossroads. We carry the principle and we feed them into the physical. We embody them. We play with them. We move them around. We mourn them. We take these brilliant frequencies and we just, you know, we hit the sandbox with it. And at some point we leave the sandbox. And what we get to bring back with us are all of those principles that we lived through here on Earth. And, you know, maybe we took some pictures of the Little House on the Prairie color forms to remember too. Like,
it's important to remember where you came from. I think that's helpful to see how far you've gone. Really.
Listen, I was cynical too. I think that's really, I don't know. It's something that we definitely share. At least Tage didn't like shout you out in a teacher training, call you a sourpuss, or maybe she did. She did to me.
She called me out a few times, but no, none of that. I think one time I took my phone out and it was like, what are you doing? You know, that was not fun.
Appreciated it. It's like, why am I such a fucking sourpuss? What's my problem? Like, what's my stick up my ass? Okay, yeah, the earth and world and life is like, it's hard and painful and sad and rude and loud noises and people chewing with their mouths open. It's like, it's really like, you know, it's a lot. And I have a great life. So why am I such a sourpuss? Like, can I stop looking at all these things to complain about, victimization, gene key number 5. And can I live like someone who knows what it feels like to have freedom and to be happy with that and enjoy that and try to help others experience that as well?
We're in the middle of a no complaining challenge. I want to just invite more people to participate. I've been getting real into the detail here of what because obviously now it should come as no surprise. There's a heavy negative mind situation going on inside of my brain, but it's fascinating because complaint, as I've been sort of examining all of it, complaint doesn't necessarily mean some kind of tantrum, like you didn't take the garbage out and you said you were going to, you know, it's for me, a lot of it is around negative self-talk. It's around a little bit around gossip. Did I need to share that? Was that helpful? Was it, you know, that's a negative, you know, it's sort of a low vibration. And I've been really kind of cutting into the weeds here around this because, you know, all of these, as we're talking about these frequencies and what's available to us, you know, it's not all love and light. It's not positive. We have, you know, part of the human experience is going through the harder times or these negative moments, but can we go through them with grace, with openness, with discernment, with clarity, with acceptance, which all of which to me are positive energies and positive qualities. But are we going to fight it? Or, you know, are we going to negate the experience? Because if we consider ourselves fractal beings of source consciousness, universal consciousness. And you mentioned even taking the soul through lifetime, through lifetime, through lifetime, right? The soul's on this journey. The soul, in my opinion, it again is part of this cosmic field, part of natural law. And there's neutrality there. So every time the self-talk, the negativity, the complaints is just another little lie. It's like another little take it down a notch, right? Of I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I don't deserve it, da, 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 whatever that is. And so you can sort of, I'm going macro on the like complaining and I'm taking it real micro to see how I'm chipping away at that, the fullest expression of myself as a soul being that is completely one with God. There is no separation. It's a ultimate merge, constant. And you know, you can blow yourself up in your egoic state and make you sell, you know, like, I'm a master, I'm an expert, and that's moving you in one direction. And then on the other end is, I suck, I don't know anything, what am I even doing here? And we kind of go back and forth between this polarity, as you mentioned. And I guess my feeling is, don't is one of the ones I'm trying to stay away from. So, okay, I'm exploring the idea that we're moving through these polarities all the time. And my hope is that as I move through it, the parabola of the wave is not so extreme.
Right. You know, a friend of mine was just sharing, she was in a meeting with her boss and he was like, talking shit about some other people and praising her. Like, you know how people do that? They'll be like, wow, I love how fast you are. You know, Joanna's really slow, like that kind of thing. And I'm like, wow, yeah. And I said to her, I'm like, you know, gossip isn't good for anyone. Mm-mm. It really isn't. I mean, it's something we do. It's junk food. But at the end of the day, gossip, comparing is also victim language. It's like, it really has nothing to do with me. It's like, or and so that Schadenfreude, is that how you pronounce it?
Schadenfreude, yeah.
Or it's like someone else's misfortune makes you look better, or someone else's shortcomings make you look better. And it's like, that should have nothing to do with it, right? But I mean, it does. We're society. We're all figuring out how we work with each other. But it really is, again, like getting back to this frequency of, yeah, you know, that may be, she may be slow, and I work this way, and we're both trying to achieve this end. And my friend handled it great. She just told me how she was just like, yeah, I just stayed on course with him. Cause she's like, I know how he works. And mm-hmm. she also knows if he's talking shit about this person, he's going to talk shit about her. Yep. And if you can take the pin out of it and let the air out of it, it's like, then you're also not relying on someone else's praise at the detriment of somebody else, at the expense of somebody else's ego. But you know, what you were just saying too, I wanted to say, and this goes back to what we were talking about in terms of the expert stuff. A friend of mine's a camera woman, which is a heavily male-dominated industry. And she was letting me know about, like, just, you know, what it's like to be a camera woman amongst all these dudes. And she was interviewing for some job. And she's like, yeah, she's like, you know, there's all these guys and, you know, they're really good. Da, 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 da. And I was like, well, are you good? I don't know. I mean, are you good? And she's like, I'm good enough. And that was one of the, I'll never forget. We were sitting in the Whole Foods in Venice. Nicole Lobel, wherever you are, says to me, I'm good enough. And I'm like, fuck, that tips the scales, doesn't it? That's like, maybe I'm not a master, and who's a master? Like, maybe I'm not an expert. Who says who's an expert? But I am good enough. And that's back to sort of the polymath of it. Like, I think we see it too. It's like, not the best person, quote unquote, doesn't necessarily get the job. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to ask yourself, well, best, what's the best? Like, technique, personality, puts up with some dick? Like, I don't know. Like, but that was one of the most freeing things for me to carry with me as I tried to do things too. You know, I'm an actor. Like, I'm good enough. I am good enough to be a series regular. So I don't have to waste any more time doubting that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, I mean, we're all today years old. We're all a certain age. Like, I mean, there's this meme where someone's like, man, I sure wish I'd taken notes on that first rodeo.
All right. More conversations to be had. We're in the middle of eclipse season and we're moving through it. So thank you.
Yeah.
There's a lot to navigate, and the energy is still extremely hot, as it is all the time, to be perfectly honest with you. It doesn't have to be eclipse season to be feeling pressurized, but I think that these conversations are very helpful.
Yeah, keep it simple, everyone. Just keep it simple. Look, just don't overthink. I think that's a big thing for you and I is don't overthink it. It's something you're noticing. It's like we've been saying, write it down, take notice, stay as neutral as you can, you know, as you can. You're good enough.
All right. Thanks much. Bye, everybody.